The first agenda item says comments by Chairman Dever regarding committee responsibilities, and I'm going to keep that very short. I don't expect that we're going to meet more than two or three times. Our purpose is just to follow up on the actions of the government oversight or government services committee during the interim. Let the record show that Senators Wardner and Krebsbach are now present. Oh. Okay. I understand that Neville Kenning from the Hague Group is going to give some background on what has taken place so far, so I'm going to just leave it with that, and that will be my remarks for beginning this. So with that, we'll move to the next agenda item. And it says OMB, but I understand we want to adjust the agenda a little bit there, too. So Neville, are you going to go first?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Neville Kenning, Vice President Hague Group, responsible for public sector state government consulting. And I appreciate, is this the first meeting of this committee?
Of the CSOC committee, yeah.
Mr. Kenning?
Oh, turn it on.
There you go.
We'll just get closer to it. Get closer to the microphone. Okay. I appreciate the opportunity to spend time with this committee today. I recognize a number of the faces from the previous committee. And what was suggested to me was that I give, without going into all the detail of the work that was done of the Government Services Committee, that was effectively phase one of the project, that I give a little bit of an overview as to what that was about, and then move to the primary purpose of today, which is to provide you as the Oversight Committee with an update as to where we're at in terms of the progress on what we're effectively knowing as phase two, which is effectively picking up the recommendations that were adopted from phase one and what's the progress that we're making on that. I want to stress that the purpose of today is for information. We are not coming to you today with any recommendations because of where we're at in terms of the sequence of the project. The reason why we slightly changed the agenda is that Ken Purdy, the class and comp manager, when we get to one of the primary things that we've been doing, which is the job evaluation process, is going to give a little overview as to what's been going on there. You have in front of you a copy of the presentation, which is, I think, Sarah, is it two to a page again? So when I refer to a page number, you should be looking at the little number that's on not your singular page, but the little number page that's on this two to a page for you. It's a little bit light in here, but hopefully you can follow along. By way of introduction, for the how many members of the Mr. Chairman, how many members of the committee were not on the GSC? Okay. And so if those of you who were can indulge me for a few minutes, you can either nod off or see if I say the same things as I said this time during last year. I'll give you a little bit of background as to how the current work that we're doing came about. In February, and this is set out on page three, February 2010, the Government Services Committee, which was an interim committee, contracted with the Hague Group to do an audit of 10 components of the classified employee compensation plan. And then what occurred, the work on that project started, in fact, with a 2.5-hour session with the Government Services Committee in March of 2010, where we went through and said, you identified these 10 components, what do you mean? And that was done in a session with the committee where we effectively defined what that meant. In the period of April through to August, we basically did analysis, detailed data gathering and analysis of those 10 components that we were asked to review. And in a meeting in August 2010, we met with the Government Services Committee, presented about 123 pages of analysis. And by the way, each of the meetings that I refer to here, for those who weren't on the committee, are public documents. The documentation is available for those who may want to have nothing else to read tonight, who want to go back and read all the detail of those. In September 2010, towards the end, I think it was something like the 30th, 29th of September, We presented to the committee recommendations. The August presentation was basically a whole lot of detail of analysis of those 10 components. The September was, well, what do we want to do with that? And it was a series of recommendations. In accordance with that first contract, which was to end October the 30th, by October the 30th, we met with the Government Services Committee. We presented a final report to the Government Services Committee in which we set out a series, not so much of recommendations, but the way that we set out the recommendations was what was the component, what were recommended steps that should be undertaken, what were the expected outcomes of doing those steps, and a priority. And at that meeting at the end of October, we were asked by that committee, well, can you give us a proposal of how you would work with us to make that happen? And secondly, can you have it done by April the 15th, 2011? There's not so much April the 15th, but ready for implementation July the 1st, 2011. And the debate that the discussion that effectively occurred in that committee was, because you're on a biennium process, if there are things that require legislative decision, if we don't get it done by April the 15th, then you leave town, and we're effectively looking at a July 2013 implementation as distinct from a July 2011 implementation. And the desire of the committee at that time was, why wait 2.5 years? If these are things that you say need to be done and there's some priority to them, let's get them done. And so what occurred was a Legislative Council meeting in middle of November. Contract was approved to do effectively phase two, signed by the end of November, and we started a planning meeting. We had a planning meeting on the 3rd of December to say, okay, how do we make all this happen? How do we get it all done effectively by April the 15th? We asked for 2 more weeks and we were told, no, by then you'll be gone. So we're sticking to our timetable of April the 15th. So that's basically the background to how we have arrived at. And so when I use the term phase one effectively was the audit, the end result of that being October 2010, a work plan of what needs to be done, and phase two is effectively that work plan. So, and for those who are on the committee, you'll recall that, and what I'm going to go through now is each of the components that we're working on, and the first two columns on each of these pages are extracts from that work plan that we presented as the recommendations from phase one. And then for the purposes of this committee, columns 3 and 4 is, well, what progress have we made to date and what are the next steps? So the primary focus of today is to walk you through those. The first component was the development of a state compensation philosophy. The work to be done was effectively develop that. It's the umbrella overarching statement under which all other aspects should be done. That was drafted effectively during the life of that, towards the end of the Government Services Committee work, and presented as legislation. We recommended that that be done as legislation rather than just as executive order. And my understanding of progress is that it's passed in the House, it's being heard in a Senate committee, and is pending final Senate passage in terms of the compensation philosophy. And someone may be able to identify, I'm not familiar with the, it's probably got a House bill number and a Senate bill number, and no?
Okay. House Bill 1031 on the calendar tomorrow on the sixth order.
Okay. And has it got a Senate? Is it still being heard in committee or, oh sorry, yeah, House Bill 1 and it's being heard in the Senate?
If it's a House bill, it stays a House bill.
Okay, all right. I'm not familiar with, I know you got numbers for it, that's all. Okay. And by the way, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, if people want to ask questions, I don't know, do you want me to go through it all or then ask questions as we go along? What's your preference, Mr. Chairman?
If members have questions, they can raise their hand and
as we go through this. Okay, that's fine. The second component that was being looked at was effectively the simplification of the classification process. Classification is concerned with when someone says, I'm a clerk 2 and I think I should be a clerk 3, the process by which that occurs in terms of the agency role, the HRMS's role, the documentation that is used, etc., etc. What has occurred, so the aim here, and for those who are on the committee, remember we had basically a process flow chart of how that occurs, has a lot of steps in it at the moment, takes a certain period of time. In our opinion, it could be simplified both in terms of process and in terms of time. What occurred there was during December, we in the Hay Group prepared a preliminary redesign process and some forms. We had a meeting with HRMS and agency HR leaders. We probably had 30 or so at that meeting, and that occurred on January the 5th. We took 4 to 5 hours to walk through the recommended changes to that. Agency, because this is primarily has an impact in the agencies, agencies were given the opportunity to provide some feedback by January the 21st. That has occurred. There has been consolidation of the feedback from the agencies has been occurring since then. What's left to be done on that component is a review of the feedback, determine what changes we should make to the preliminary design, with the aim being that we will have recommended changes to the process to be finalised by March the 18th. The next major component, this has really been one of the two major time-intensive components. You remember that one of the issues was the issue of the approach that you take to using job evaluation, and it was agreed that you would adopt the Hay method of job evaluation, and we would go through and reapply the job evaluation process to all 900 classifications. And so this has been the most labour-intensive process that we've been going through. And I'm now going to call on Ken Purdy, because this has involved both agencies and HRMS staff, to talk you a little bit more through what's been occurring here. By the way, many of the people that are involved in this process are sitting over to my left here. If they look worn out, it's because we've been beating them up, working them day after day on this job evaluation process. So.
Thank you, Neville. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Ken Purdy, the Classification and Compensation Manager with Human Resource Management Services. I'm just passing around a little addendum to Neville's presentation that details this step in the process that we've been involved in over the last month and a half. The top block in the handout is just a table of the time frames and tasks that kind of mirrors the different pages and sequence of events that Neville's presentation covers. Recommendation number 3 on the table, or the methods of classification, I should say the job evaluation training, is the area which has most involved Human Resource Management Services in the past few weeks. It represents a significant update of the class evaluation system that we've been using since 1982. Adopting the Hay Guide Chart job profile method of job evaluation is resulting in a state-of-the-art, validated job evaluation system consistently measuring the content of job classes in state government. The process has involved training a job evaluation team in the Hay system. The job evaluation team includes 7 members from Human Resource Management Services, our 7 classification, compensation, and generalist staff that work in this area. We're also including eight human resource staff from agencies, broadening out the perspective, broadening out the analysis of the jobs in all the agencies. Those 8 staff represent Information Technology Department, the Health Department, Department of Human Services, Job Service, WSI, Department of Corrections and Rehab, Water Commission, and Department of Transportation. In the initial 2 days of training, the week of January 24th, we also had an additional 10 staff from the agencies participate in the training so that they would have a background, have a basic knowledge of the process, and be available probably for replacements if we have turnover or additional support as we go forward. So we had additional staff from DOT,
Bank of North Dakota, Attorney General's Office, WSI, Highway Patrol, Corrections, ITD, Human Services, Tax Department, and Job Service that have also been trained in the basic part of the process. We kept the core team to 15 just to be kind of fast on our feet and aggressive and workable in getting through the task that faced us. After the first two days of the week of January 24th, we moved into 3 days of actually evaluating 200 of our benchmark jobs. That was a selection of core jobs at all levels and various occupations representing various agencies. And we spent those 3 days looking at job descriptions and evaluating those 200 jobs as a committee of 15. By Friday afternoon, we wanted to go home. Following up on that, in the weeks of February 7th and February 14th, we set aside 3 days each of those 2 weeks where the committee of 15 broke into subcommittees, five groups of three, and we proceeded through the remaining 700 or so job classes. We completed that, we completed it before the end of the sixth day, I think the agencies and the staff, by that time, although exhausted, I think they really appreciated the process, the involvement, the ability of the Hay system to really, really make sense of the job analysis. Finally, then this week, starting Wednesday, we've been involved in a sore thumb review of those 900 job class evaluations, where we're going through and re-looking at basically all 900 in a lot more quick fashion, but with Neville's guidance and kind of checking. It's called sore thumb. We look for anything out of line or anything that was overlooked or anything in the job duties or functions of various jobs that maybe weren't understood the first time through. So we're about three quarters of the way through that. We'll continue it tomorrow morning, and that's going very well. It's really validating the work that we did over those 2 days. The errors we're finding are you know, just not particularly significant, nothing where people have really gotten off track in interpreting the job evaluations, but it's just a matter of cross-referencing, cross-checking, and making sure that we're staying with it. So that's the process now, and when this is done, we'll have our initial job evaluation complete. And I want to stress initial, because this is just like the system that we've had in place for many years. It's a living system. Jobs change, organizations change, and part of the work going forward is to ensure that the job evaluations remain current. And so our group of 15, supplemented by the additional staff that were trained, will be able to maintain the equity and the appropriateness of the job evaluation system going forward.
Thanks, Ken. Thanks, Ken. Two other comments that I'd make. One is we're very appreciative of the fact that OMB approved the purchase of the technology that it has enabled us to get this done. Remember when you said to me, can we get this done by the 15th of April? And I said, well, some technology will enable us to do that. The technology that OMB purchased, which is called GEM or Job Evaluation Manager, has made particularly that when the 700 needed to be done, were done basically in 5.5 calendar days because we were able to break the groups into, break the team into small groups, enabled that to occur. Secondly, may say what some of that is technical stuff. What does it all mean? The end result of the job evaluation process is the reassignment of jobs to grades. You recall in the audit, we talked about the fact that you had a lot of compression. You had jobs that reported to each other that were in the same grade. Even though you had 20 grades, you hardly used the bottom five and you hardly used the top five or six. So we now get a more equitable spreading of jobs based on a 2011 understanding of job content. It will be the basis by which both classification and grade allocation will be done for going forward. And I'm not just saying this because I'm standing in front of you or the committee, but these people have done a great job. We set out a timetable. They haven't missed a day. And they've been really committed to the process, and as As they know I'm a hard taskmaster on this, the quality of the work that they've done has been extremely high. And I think if you ask them, they would say they know a lot more about jobs across the state than they didn't know, than they knew before, regardless of which agency they're from. The other major labour-intensive part that we've been working on, which has been primarily a hay, being done by the hay team, is concerned with classification and job evaluation will give us a grade structure. But what we've also been working on is how do we develop new salary structures. And the way in which this has been done is by effectively redoing the salary gathering process. And this, of course, for you as a legislator, is a key thing, because if there's fiscal implications, that's why we had to be done by the 15th of April. So what we did there was primarily, the identification of the major sectors of employment in North Dakota. And we identified about 8 or 9 major sectors of employment. That was done in December. We then identified employers for participation in what we call a customized salary survey. In other words, employers that we want to go out and gather data from across those major sectors. And just to give you a sense of those sectors, there was cities, counties, the education sector, the healthcare sector, oil and gas sector, engineering services, environmental sector, other private sector including retail, the insurance sector, the agricultural sector, financial services sector, utility sector, and then industrial manufacturing sector. We identified 112 organizations in those sectors. We identified 103 benchmark jobs that we would send out in terms of survey. Now, not every organization gets all 103 jobs. For example, you wouldn't be sending jobs that you only find in the public sector to a hospital. We designed a survey instrument that was done by December the 22nd. It was sent out by January the 7th. We have done intensive follow-up of survey participants. What I just read from you, if you wanted to see it, we can show you the follow-up calls that we've made to every one of those participants. We initially set a target date of returning by the 4th of February. We knew that was just to get their attention. Even today, there are still surveys coming in. And we've continued our intensive follow-up. Last week, we went through with the HRMS team saying, we think we really should be getting data from, this is the must-haves, should-haves, nice-to-haves. And we went through last week, for example, and said, and I don't know if there's any, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I don't know if there's representatives or senators here from Fargo, but what's up with Fargo? Because we were missing amongst the cities, we were only missing the city of, it was Grand Forks, I apologize. I just got to make sure that I only offend the right people, huh? What's up with Grand Forks? The only city we're really missing was Grand Forks. Amongst the counties, we're missing Grand Forks County. Amongst the education, we're missing Fargo Public School Districts. So, you know, it's just like, and this reminds me of when we were doing the same thing in Kansas, Mr. Chairman, and we're missing the city of Topeka, and the senator from there goes, that's the end of their funding. 36 hours later, we had the survey submission from the city of Topeka. So we went through and said, for example, amongst the universities, we were missing North Dakota State and Fargo had said no. Well, guess what? In the last 2 days, they've said yes, because we made some appropriate calls. If there's any representatives or senators from Fargo, I hope I'm getting the from Grand Forks, we hope we're getting the message across. So there are others that we've gone through and said, okay, we really think it's important to have those. We've been making calls to them. For example, the Blue Cross Blue Shield we thought was important to have. We made a contact. So far we're up to about 50 participants out of the 112. You go, that may be light. It's actually not, because within our existing, and you can see this in the work to be done in the next steps, we are not just, this is one of the sources that we're using. We're going to be supplementing this with other sources that already exist. The Central States Compensation Survey, which we've used in the past, we'll continue to use. The Job Service Survey that we've used in the past. what we call the HeyPayNet database, which is our own database. We have data from 128 employers within the state of North Dakota already in our database. Some of them may only have one or two employees, but we have at least 20 that we have at least 20 employees so that we can supplement. So we think we are going to have a very good sample of data from which to make salary structure recommendations. If any of you say, did you get participants from my area? I'm happy to go through the list with you afterwards, and if you can twist some more arms like we've been doing in the last week. Our drop dead date really is next Friday the 7th, because Friday the 11th, because on the 15th of March we're going to be meeting internally. The primary survey team that's been doing this for Hay Group is in our Kansas City office, and I'm going to be meeting with them on the 15th to go through and say, what does all this data mean? We need to be starting to develop preliminary salary structures so we can meet your timetable.
Representative Ruby.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Kenning, do you, when you ask for data on salaries, do you break that down by annual salary, or is it by hour, or how do you determine that? Do you work on hours worked and all?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Representative, we asked multiple questions, both in terms, and I don't have the full list with me, but I can pretty much recall it. The most important thing before we even get to the salary data is we asked for a comparison of content to content, not title to title. So we send out, for those 103 benchmark jobs, here is our description, our being the state of North Dakota, description of this work. Do you have one of those? Not, we don't send out, we have an accounts clerk, do you have an accounts clerk? Because then we don't necessarily know whether we're comparing content to content. So it's content to content. We then ask them, do they have it, what we call an even match? Yes, ours is like that. A low match, it's like it, but it's slightly less. A high match. We then ask for the number of incumbents who do that job. We ask the salary range data, and then we, on an annualized basis, assuming a 2,080-hour year. So we are, if they're doing less or more than that, we ask that question. Okay. We ask for average salary to average actual paid salary, as well as salary range data. We ask them, do they have open ranges or do they have steps? We ask them if they pay variable pay, such as allowances or, so we're gathering, and I don't have the full list, but hopefully that's giving you a sense of the sort of information, because we want to be able to compare apples to apples. For example, if the state is working 1,500 hours and is paying, and I'll give you a ridiculous scenario, but if you're paying $30,000 to a job for 1,500 hours, and someone else is paying $30,000 but they have to work 2,000 hours, then we're not comparing apples to apples. We need to be able to do it on a consistent hour basis. Now, it's not so much the one that we have to be careful of in that is when we get data from the education sector. Are they doing 9-month years or 10-month years? Are they doing, what is the basis of their salaries there? So, does that help? Okay, thank you.
Is that just salary then, or total compensation?
No, what we've been doing, remember we agreed, as I mentioned here, we're going to be adding back in, we're rolling in the analysis that we did on benefits for in phase one. So we're going to be doing a total compensation analysis, salary plus benefits, but we agreed we didn't need to resurvey benefits because we already had a pretty good sample of benefits data from phase one. But yes, it is salary plus benefits because we want to take into consideration the competitiveness of benefits when we develop salary structure recommendations.
Representative Bino.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Neville. When you're going to the private sector, a lot of private sectors, employees pay part of their packages, like for health care and retirement and so forth. Is that going to be in this findings as well?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Representative, when I said we're not going to supplement, we're not going to redo the survey. We have that sort of information when we did the benefit survey in phase one. Okay. The aim then is to continue on those steps. Our aim is to start working on preliminary salary structures on the 15th, with the aim of having development of new salary structures by the 30th of March. Now you can see here we are, what, the 3rd of March. Hopefully you can see how the two most labour-intensive parts are starting to come together. The job evaluation work that the committee's been doing will lead to a new grade structure. At the moment you have grades 1 through 20 where jobs are classifications are assigned to them. We will have a new version of that. Assigned to each of those is a salary range with a minimum, a midpoint and a maximum. We will have new versions of that. And that all sort of comes together by the 30th of March. And as part of that, we'll be developing some preliminary cost implications. Now, you recall one of the other components was fringe benefits. We made some recommendations, and this is really a repeat of what we said at the end of phase one. Any actions to be considered will be in the context of total remuneration analysis and any changes that you may be considering to health care and retirement as part of your legislative process. Remember, we made the decision at the outcome of phase one. There was a separate study going on with an employee benefits committee. We did not make significant recommendations other than to say we need, which is really representative back to your question, yes, we need to take into consideration the competitiveness of benefits, but our brief was not a major redesign of benefits. And one of the questions I have for you, as I let the chairman know, is at the end of today's presentation, we would certainly like to know any changes to benefits that are working their way through the legislative process as much as you want to declare, so that we can take that into consideration, because we were aware that there was some potential changes to the retirement plan, etc. The remaining items are really, there is nothing that has occurred yet, because the impact is really once we've done the core rebuilding of the house, which is the grade and salary structure. One is recruitment and retention tools, and which is basically firming up the definition of how they would be used. There's no action being taken on this. It will be done in the March-April period, because the impact of that is really, one of the key things that impact that is what do our new salary ranges look like? We potentially had recruitment or retention tool bonuses because perhaps our salary ranges weren't competitive. So we can't really rebuild anything on that till we see what our new salary ranges look like. Methods of developing and sustaining a consistent long-term salary increase policy. In terms of how we're going to do, is it cost of living increases, is it merit increases, is it equity increases, etc. Now you recall we made recommendations of how you should be rolling together the consideration of both market and performance. But once again, no action's been taken on that yet, because we've got to do that within the context of what the new structures look like. We will commence work on that in April 1 through 15, but really, and there's two key dates for you to understand here. We need to get stuff done for you before you leave town so that the legislative decision part can be done in April. But the desired implementation is July the 1st. So April the 15th is not the end. April the 15th is the end, because some of this is really about how the plan would be administered for going forward. So I'd certainly like all the audience to keep in their mind, April the 15th is not the end. April the 15th is the part that is the fiscal impact that you people need to be concerned about. But some of this stuff, which is primarily about how we administer the plan, we can't get into that until we know what the decisions are in terms of what the rebuilt house looks like. So it's not like we have been tardy on this. There's a sequence to this that makes sense. We can't really do this part here until we know what the new plan looks like. Same in terms of how the budget and appropriation process will occur. No action's been taken on that yet. You recall, though, that what we suggested was whatever you appropriate, that should be communicated in terms of dollars. It may be calculated in terms of percentage, but it should be communicated in terms of dollars. Because if we say there's 5%, as we know in the past, that creates an expectation that I'm going to get 5%. If we say 3%, that creates an expectation that I'm going to get 3%. Well, no, that's not the intention. That's the amount that we're appropriating, so we tell an agency, you got $2 million. Rather than, I mean, that may equate to a certain percentage, but that then we haven't created this impression that, well, I'm going to get 5% because that's the number I heard communicated. And that's not the way in which we should be delivering pay. And the final aspect is concerned with the vacancy savings, the approach to that. Once again, we need to firm up the definition of what vacancy savings means. So the last two or three pages are really, once we've rebuilt that house by the 15th of April, we can then work on how these things will be administered. Now, Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure if all the committee is aware of this, but you recall when we had the conference call a month or so ago, and I think, Alan, you were on this. So if I'm making an announcement on behalf of you that I shouldn't be making, these were the dates that we talked about. The contract requires that we present a preliminary report to you. It actually says by the 31st of March, and a final report by the 15th of April. Well, to indulge the committee, I will be in New Zealand on the 31st of March celebrating my parents' 65th wedding anniversary. So I will not be here on that date, but I'm not going to miss that celebration. And so what we agreed was that we could have that 31st of March could slip to the 5th of April, which is a Tuesday, and we would do the final, and so we will present you with up-to-date progress to date, but more importantly for you, what's any fiscal impact of the new grade and salary structures. And then the 15th of April is a Friday, and I was advised to try and avoid a Friday, so we've scheduled the next one to be on the 14th of April, which is really only about 7 or 8 work days later. And I'm hoping you're still in town by that day. It's tax day.
We'll see what we can do.
Hey, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman. Person.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Wouldn't your parents be much more interested in celebrating such a milestone in the state of North Dakota, I think?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. One can't hear, one can't see, but yeah, they'll be in good shape when they get here. I'm sure they'll enjoy it.
Tell them congratulations on it.
So, yeah, well, it's also Ken Purdy's birthday, the 14th as well. So, you know, that's a taxing day, I think, is what you say. So, Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure if people were aware of those dates, but they were the dates that we did talk about on that call, and I don't know if they'd been put, had they been put on a calendar, or am I making an announcement that was preemptive?
So, I think they were tentative, but they can be firmed up.
Yeah, so, well, hopefully they can be. You know, what we've tried to do in terms of the timetable that we set is these are the dates, and we've stuck to our dates because we really need to. And so hopefully they can be firmed up, and if they can be firmed up, we'd even like to try and set, is that morning, afternoon, or whatever in terms of those dates. But, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, that's basically an overview as to where we're at. I'm encouraged by what we've got done. I know I can't give you any firm, here's what it looks like yet, but hopefully I've given you a taste of why I can't say that yet, but the next 4 weeks are really critical so that we can meet those commitments and those dates. So,
Mr. Ken Chairman, talked about the sore thumb process.
Hmm?
Are we generally in pretty good shape, or are we kind of a sore thumb?
Well, no, let me explain that what sore thumb really means. What sore thumb means is effectively the committees have been going through reevaluating all the 900 classifications and putting them into a grade. It's nothing to do with the external from a market perspective. A sore thumb process is really just a quality assurance process of all the work. Because remember, we worked as a committee with 200. We broke them into 5 groups of 3 for the remaining 700. It's effectively bringing all the 900 together so that we can do a review of all the classifications to say, have we got the right relativities? And I'll give an example of a discussion that occurs there. We'd look at one and go, there's something not quite right here because this job would end up at a grade lower than the job that it supervises. So that, hence the term, it stands out like a sore thumb, so we need to correct that. One of the byproducts that's occurred, you have roughly 900 classifications, even though the purpose at this point in time is not to do classification consolidation, we've already identified numerous classifications where we go, there is no incumbent in that classification, we don't need that classification. Going down forward, there will be less classifications. And the less classifications we have, the easier it is to administer the plan. And we've also, in some series, and I hope I'm not getting too technical here, you might have a 2 and a 3, and the job evaluation process has measured them at the same, where it says, we can't see the difference in terms of content between a 2 and a 3. There's a potential for classification consolidation as well. So.
Questions of the committee? Oh, Representative Ruby.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess within these classifications, you know, there's the pay structure for each classification, but within that, is there anything that indicates years of service in that classification or performance, or is it just classification?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure. Are you in terms
as far as what maybe their salary is?
What's the basis of their current salary? Or for, are you asking for currently or for going forward?
Well, for state employees, I don't know what it'll be in the going forward because that's still, I'm sure, being developed. But currently, when you do evaluations, you find that one classification, the pay is the same whether somebody's been in that classification for 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, or is there some performance or some evaluations that determine different levels of salary in that same classification?
Right. Mr. Chairman, Representative, as part of the analysis that we did in phase one of the issues we looked at was what was called salary inequities or salary equity and inequities. And we did an analysis of a cross-section sample of classifications to see the extent to which there was a variance in pay for people in the same classification. And I remember, I don't have that with me today, but I remember there was one job like an administrative assistant one or something like that where there was a 65% spread of pay between the lowest person, the lowest pay for the person in that classification and the highest pay for the person in that classification. Now, in the current, and there were others where there was like a 22% spread of pay. Now, you could potentially have a 67% spread of pay for people in the same classification in your current plan because the spread between the minimum and the maximum of the salary in a range is 67%, which is a very wide spread. So one of the things we're looking to do, now the reasons for that could be one or more of the following. One could be time, two could be performance, three could be the availability of funding, because with pay for performance, people could have got different pay increases. We didn't do the depth of that analysis. What we wanted to do was look and see the extent to which there was a range of pay across. Now, interestingly, the greater range of pay was in some of the administrative clerical positions, and the smaller spread was in some of the professional positions. For example, I seem to recall an engineer or a nurse where there was only a 22% spread of pay. Now, a small spread of pay can actually be a downside as well, which says everyone's basically getting the same increase, and what happened to us paying for performance? Going forward, one of the things that we'll be looking at is, I don't see the point of having such a wide salary spread. You know, if we think the market is say $30,000 for a job, why would you have a minimum that's like at $22,000? Why would you have a maximum say? You know, so why have such a wide salary spread? So we're going to be looking at the structure of ranges, but we've also developed one of the recommendations is how pay will move in the future, because there was some inconsistencies in the past of when there was this equity money. It basically, the merit money was for performance. That was one pot of money. The equity money basically said disregard performance, give it to people who are low in the range. Well, you could have a non-performer who is low in the range getting equity money. So that's where we said roll those two concepts together. So we know what exists in the past. It wasn't too bad. It fell within the range of what could occur because of your wide salary spreads. But what we think is more important for going forward is having the appropriate spread of salary ranges. And by the way, it may not be uniform. I'll give you an example. If the going rate is $10 an hour, which is roughly 20,000. Why would you have a 67% salary spread for a job where the going rate is $10 an hour? It doesn't make sense. I mean, you go, if it's $10 an hour, why would we pay less than 9 and why would we pay more than 11? I mean, it's because some jobs have a finite rate. I don't care if the incumbent's been there 30 years. If the going rate's $10 an hour, why would you expect to get $15 an hour? The way to get $15 an hour is aspire to a bigger position. So that we know what the existing is. More importantly is that we have the right mechanisms for going forward.
Okay.
Other questions? I'm curious, and I'm not sure whether this is a question for you or for Ken or somebody else, but what might we anticipate as a need for legislative action going forward?
Mr. Chairman, I believe that there's two parts to this, and I may need your help on the second part of this. The main action that I think we're going to need from you is appropriation, because basic in terms of funding for July the 1st, or you know, I guess it's for the next 2 years. The second part is related to some roles and responsibilities that currently exist in law, primarily, and this is primarily, can you help me out here? Primarily related to the role of the State Personnel Board, is that, am I correct? Which we're working on as well. But can you help me on the second part?
Well, Mr. Chairman, the State Personnel Board fills a role of reviewing classification appeals. If an employee or an agency feels that the wrong classification, wrong pay grade is assigned to a job, there's a process where they can appeal the decisions to the State Personnel Board. We've had some discussions and debate and so forth about just how that's going to fit given the adoption of the Hay system, and frankly I don't think we've reached any conclusions at this point yet, and I don't know if we'll be ready to address that still this session, or if it would be better kind of left status quo and maybe address in the next session. I think we could go through the biennium with the existing process as an alternative if it's necessary, and so you know, we're just not ready to do anything too drastic and create suspicion or concern in the process up front. So
and Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, what Ken just described, remember I said what the second component was, the simplification of the classification process. On that work process flow that we developed of what currently exists, the role of the state role of the state personnel board is at the back end of that process, and one of the ways that we see for potential simplification both in terms of process and timing is we are reviewing the role of the state personnel board. And one of the reasons we see a potential for changing that, and this is really based on our experience with other states, is that if you involve agencies a lot more in the classification and job evaluation process at the front end, then there's less need for them for a potential appeal at the back end. And it was really based on our experience in one other state where they had a process similar to you, and then they adopted a process similar to what you're doing now. Previously, people could appeal their classification through the whole judicial process. It could actually end up in the Supreme Court. We go, well, this, you know, that's not a good use of court's time, and it'd take forever. So we established a process where the committee had had a much more active role. If they couldn't agree, then they came to us as Hay, as the independent arbiter, for final decision. I've probably had 11 in the last 10 years. You know, so the amount of appeals or requests for reviews, because there was a lot more involvement at the front end, rather, in other words, the process was a lot more front end oriented, so you didn't need the appeal at the back end. So I, depending on what we agree on the finalization of the classification process, I'm a little more, we got two choices, Mr. Chairman. We can do what Ken suggested, which is let the agency see that this process can work for a couple years and come in the next biennium with a change to the law, or we can say, no, let's get the law changed now. but they're really the only two categories. We've been looking at what other legislative changes. One is the appropriation, and secondly, the only other thing that we think requires law change, well, there's the third, there's the comp philosophy, but that's not a change, that's an adoption of something that's being recommended. The only other one really is that role of the State Personnel Board, as far as we can see at this point in time.
Okay. Other questions? If not, thank you.
Okay, am I allowed to ask you a question? Can I, Mr. Chairman, members, can I come back to then the question, and either you can answer it here or someone could brief me offline from this, of any potential changes to benefits, either particularly retirement or health care, that are in the legislative hopper that we should be aware of as we're doing our analysis of salary and benefits, any potential appropriations that have been considered for salary, just stuff that we could be aware of, and whether it needs to, I just say it doesn't need to necessarily be answered here, but as we're doing our analysis so that we can be prepared for what ifs, if someone could make us aware of that in the next couple of weeks before we start doing our analysis on the 15th.
I'd be happy to stand corrected, but my understanding or my sense is that there are no changes to health insurance that 21 Senate Bill 2108 addresses the retirement program, which right now the state contributes both the employer and employee side, and in each of the next 2 years we're going to bump each side 1 point and the employees will pay that.
So is that the one and one?
Yeah.
For the next two biennials or next 2 years?
Next 2 years. The bill was introduced at four years, we reduce that to 2 years, and we'll look at it again in the next session and see where we're at.
Okay.
The amount of money being appropriated right now for employee compensation is set up, was recommended at 3 and 3, but I think Senate Appropriations Committee was looking at 4 and 1. Because we budget on a biennial basis, doing it 2 and 2 stacks it up as another increase coming into the next biennium. So 4 and 1, as I understand it, is the same dollars. It's just that they get the 4% up front, and then the 1 is set into the next year to take care of the retirement part. Senator Tubbs-Bott.
Mr. Chairman, is there not going to be an increase in the premium on the health insurance, which would actually result in a benefit because it's picked up by the state?
Right. Because the state's paying the full premium, there's an increase in, yeah. As I understand it, this biennium lower than the last.
Yeah. Was that 7.3 over a two-year period that I'd heard talked about, or is something like that?
I'm not sure what it is.
Okay. So if I can just get clarification, when you said a 3 and 3 and a 4 and 1, is the 4 and 1 superseded the 3? Was the 3 and 3 the start point?
It was now 4 and 1. Yeah.
And is that Senate, House, or is that in one and not the other, or are we still? I'm not asking you to make decisions.
I just want to see the second half, and we're just trying to figure out what the House is doing.
and we in the House are trying to figure out what the Senate just sent us. So we're going to have that discussion.
You got those caps with peaks going that way? Yeah, I got it.
And as far as the benefit goes, the House hasn't heard the PERS side for the benefit package, so my committee won't hear that till I think it's scheduled for next week, and so we'll have that discussion at that point.
Right. Well, Mr. Chairman, maybe all I could ask is that, you know, through Sarah or Alan, if they could just keep us apprised of potentially which ones are progressing further than others in terms of. Because I want to be in the reason I'm asking is I want to be in a position when I come before you as we're developing, and then particularly if I come before you and you go, but did you take into consideration? I go, well, I didn't know about it. I'm trying to avoid that. So,
another factor that has been discussed but not put in place anywhere is what the consideration would be of right now the state pays the employee side of it, the 4 points. If we were to increase their salary and then have them pay that by that same amount. And I understand the State Employee Association supports that. And one of the effects of it is that down the road on retirement, the retirement benefit becomes higher.
that type of change still has to be looked at actuarially, because it is a huge change to what we're trying to deal with, and we're in a situation where the plan is not whole at this point, so whether that is something we have to evaluate over time or how we put that into place, we still haven't gotten to that point.
So, Mr. Chairman, Representatives, that was like a month ago when I got asked if we asked them to pick up four and we gave them a 4.5% increase, what would that do to your analysis? That was that discussion?
Yes.
Okay. Has that got legs?
It's taking on legs.
The bill's in the possession of the House.
Don't you love this play? Okay. All right. Well, as I say, sufficient to say, because the next month is critical, I just don't want to be in a, I want to try and avoid, but have you taken into consideration, I want to avoid saying, well, I didn't know about it, because time is going to be really critical between the 5th, the work between what we have to do on the 15th to get ready for the 5th of April to get ready for the 14th of April, because we can't say, let's schedule a meeting for you on the 14th of May, and you go, we're not here. Okay.
Okay. Anything else?
Okay.
Okay, we'll look forward to...
Appreciate your time. Thank you very much.
We'll look forward to seeing your suntan face on the 5th of April.
Why, because I've been to New Zealand?
Yeah. We'll be thinking of you. The next item on the agenda is comments by other interested persons regarding the implementation. Is there anyone else who would like to offer some comments? If not, the next item is committee discussion and staff directives. Is there any additional information that we need in preparation for the April 5th meeting, or?
Are we going to let Andy talk, or should we just ignore him?
I think that was part of the adjustment, wasn't it? Yeah. So any, Representative Carls.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This committee was kind of a surprise to some of us. Is this a rollover of the interim committee?
The interim committee didn't roll over. It's a continuation of the interim committee. We had discussed that during the interim committee. And the new members on this committee are because there was some changeover in the election in November.
Thank you.
So I appreciate the willingness of everybody on the committee to attend the meeting. Anything else before the committee? If not, we will stand adjourned.